welcome. Thank you so much for downloading another installment of the podcast from Italy. I'm Jason. It's December 16th, a kind of gloomy, wet Tuesday morning. Good morning, Ashley.
Ciao tutti and buon Natale. Merry Christmas. I can't believe it is 8 days till Christmas. This is crazy.
Holy moly, not prepared. Well, no. together we run, own, and operate a little slice of paradise called La Tavola Marche, set in the foothills of the Apennine Mountains, central Italy, Piobico, Italia. If you don't know where it is, Google map it, baby. We're out in the middle of nowhere.
I know. It's like our road doesn't exist on any GPS, but we're out here. We're deep out here.
Deep out here. Today we are, it's 9:20. We're starting our second cappuccino of the morning. We have the fire going in the kitchen here. We got warm in our tootsies because it is winter time.
I know. I love it. The countdown. I know. All I can say is Christmas because it kind of snuck up on us. Like, I can't believe it's really here. And I don't know if it's the same for you sitting in your car or on the train listening, but what the hell? It's December 16th. Where did it go? How is it almost Christmas? No offense, but haven't bought any presents. Like, OMG.
OMG. It did.
Baby Jesus is on his way.
Baby Jesus is on his way. And Baby Jesus is on his way. It did sneak up. It seems like the season just ended, and we took a little time off, and now here we are, damn near the new year.
I know, and I think it's also because it's been so kind of mild this winter.
Yeah, and when I say winter's here, it just means like the trees are bare, and the nip is in the air, and it gets dark at 4 o'clock, but yeah. It's not really been cold.
No, not like in years past. We've normally had snow around Christmas. We still have a few days to find out if we will, but I don't think it's going to. I don't know. I don't feel like. It doesn't have that, snow is in the air,
no.
Or it smells like winter. It
no.
has that fireplace and all of that.
But if you remember the year that we got the really horrible snowstorm, two winters ago, it was mild.
Snowstorm of a century.
Two or three. Whatever. It was mild up until that storm.
Literally, it was a Siberian storm.
Hardcore. No, we don't need to go back into it.
No, it's just crazy. We've lived through some weird meteorological things. We had a tornado in Brooklyn. That was really wild, too. But I digress.
So we're getting into the holiday spirit here in our little slice of heaven. We went into the backyard and walked around trying to look for a tree to cut down to make our Christmas tree. Normally, we go to the nursery and buy a little pine tree and then plant it after. And we've had varying success with making the plant that tree take, because you're planting it at the wrong time. You're planting it in basically in wintertime.
Mm-hmm.
But this year we wanted to go get one because, you know, that's what
you
do when you live out in the countryside.
Yeah, you live out in the
country.
We should. So we threw on our boots and Jason grabbed a handsaw. And we trudged into the woods behind the house. Didn't go that far. Just the trail behind where, you know, folks who have been here back by the wood pile. And we took into the trail and peeled off real early. And there's not a lot of – either it's a full-grown pine or –
not a lot of the size we were looking for.
Not at all. What did we end up more with?
The branch off of a juniper bush.
It looks like a little Christmas tree.
It'll definitely do. It does look like a sad whack Charlie Brown Christmas tree. One side of it's a little bare, but that's the side that goes up against the wall.
Jason made a homemade stand for it.
Did make a homemade stand for it. So it's our Charlie Brown Christmas tree.
That thing hurts like hell.
Oh yeah, the needles are literally needles. So if you walk barefoot in the kitchen and you get one of those that point the wrong way, I thought I stepped on glass yesterday.
Or oh yeah, you did. Or if like it starts leaning over because the cat came in and literally just walks up to it, punches the one of the balls and walks away. You're like, what did you do that for? And the tree starts kind of leaning. It's hard to go to grab it because, man, it's prickly.
It is prickly. I guess that's...
It's a juniper.
It's a little branch off a big juniper bush.
I do like it, though. We decorated it nice.
We'll have to take a picture of it and throw it up on with this podcast.
Yes. If you guys are other podcast listeners, I remember one year when Bill Burr talked about having a really sad-ass tree and posted a picture, and people just made so much fun of him. I feel like that's what this would be.
It's super – I like it. You know what? It's ours.
I think your brother would call it whack.
would call it a whack Christmas tree. Other things that are other traditions that are really great in this area for Christmas time is the making of cappelletti or little hats.
Mm.
Well, I shouldn't say every, but we really try to. During December every year, we get together with our neighbors on the road and friends, and we try to have a big cappelletti making party. Cappelletti are very similar to tortellini, but smaller and from our area, whereas tortellini are more from Amelia. Cappelletti are filled with a meat filling, a mixture of pork and chicken and beef, Parmesan cheese.
Very dry.
Yeah, it's a dry, crumbly filling, and they're very, very small.
Ooh, and the key ingredient, nutmeg, lemon zest.
Oh, nutmeg and lemon zest, sure. But they're very, very small.
Just 'cause it's so different.
And they take a lot of hands to make them. And you make them usually in the wintertime. You eat them with brodo, broth, just in broth, like basically like a... Like the Italian version of like matzo ball soup or like chicken and dumplings or like it's their soupy, brothy, Christmassy thing is cappelletti and brodo. It's absolutely delicious. Huge pain in the butt to make because you have to make all these cappelletti and you have to make a really good broth and it takes a lot of time. It's all can be done ahead of time. And it's really fun to get together with your friends and neighbors and family and make kilos and kilos and kilos of this. So we'll be doing that this week. Yes, my dear.
Did you say what brodo really is? Because we take for granted what brodo
is. I'm sorry. Brodo is just broth. Just chicken. It's a mix of chicken and beef.
Yeah, exactly.
To make a broth.
So it's a bit richer than just like chicken stock is what I mean.
Yeah, it's – yeah. But it should be pretty clear. It should be pretty clear-ish like chicken
and
broth.
The size of the tortellini, cappelletti before you – fold them are literally like postage stamps. It's pretty small.
They're usually about a like 2 centimeters square.
No,
nope. An inch square.
Gaji, we were talking about setting it up again, and he loves this kind of stuff and these old timey things too. But he was like, "Ah, great, yes, okay." Jason, you make the impasto. Ashley, you fold because you have delicate fingers, and I will control and walk around. We're like, of course you will, Gaji. Of course you will. He loves nothing more than seeing like a whole team of operai, like workers, and he just gets to walk around the room making comments and busting chops. It's his kind of day.
Well, I'm very much looking forward to that. So today's Tuesday, so I hope by...
We're doing it on Thursday with Carolyn and Steph, too.
Okay, so we'll be doing that on Thursday. So that I should really start thinking about getting the...
oh, my gosh.
Getting everything together. Our no problem with the eggs is the chickens are still laying eggs like it's their job, which it really is, actually. But
yeah, but no one else is doing it along the road.
No, we have jealous neighbors because our chickens are the best. They keep on laying. Happy chickens. Panettone count.
So, well, normally, if you're a regular podcast listener, by about this time, we've been clocking in how many panettone we've eaten throughout the winter. Because there's some crazy number we'd have to look it up of how many panettone per person Italians really eat during this Christmas
how many
holiday
they sell.
Season.
It's more than one a person.
Exactly. Yeah. What it would be per person. Exactly. Sorry.
Now, for those of you who don't know what panettone is, why this is a big deal.
Panettone is that weird ass shaped big box you see at the grocery store that looks like this weird cheesy Italian thing. No, even in America, you see them.
You see them at the grocery stores.
Yeah, and you're like, what the hell is that weird candy? Is that candied fruit or is that fruit loaf? What the hell is that called?
Oh, yeah, the joke thing.
Yeah, the joke thing.
Whatever. Nut bread, nut loaf or whatever.
Yeah, and so I always think it's that. And then, no, it's actually this like really fluffy, big, tall egg bread that a lot of times we'll have candied fruit in it, which I think is not my favorite, but that's the traditional way. You can also get it with raisins or chocolate.
We've done an in-depth podcast on it before. If you look back, Panettone Pandemonium.
Yes.
Or it's on the blog. But if I remember, it started in Milan, blah, 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 blah. It's got candied fruit and raisins in it. We get the one with just the raisins. I don't really dig the candied fruit. And it's everywhere. It is ubiquitous. It is in every grocery store. There are literally piles to the ceiling in every grocery store.
You can get like gift boxes that have the panettone and like legit Prosecco with it. Like, it's not thought of as a cheesy thing. Like, you come with a panettone in hand when you're showing up somewhere at Christmas time.
Oh, my God. It's everywhere. People are trying to
We walked into the grocery store, just our little local one, and it was stacked to the ceiling. Not that they have like 50-foot ceilings, but But we'll be going to the bigger grocery store on the coast today, and I can't wait. I should bring a little camera because it will be insane to see the amount of boxes.
And everyone offers it to you from the when you go to the the butcher. There's a little thing of panettone cut up to the bank. To everyone's trying to pass off this panettone, and it's like, how much panettone can you really freaking eat?
I don't know, and I used to hate it, and now I love it.
I do like it. Okay, well, a couple of things, that we do with panettone that's not super traditional. French toast. Mm. Try making French toast
with
panettone.
Do it. Try it. Seriously.
Really, really good.
Every time.
Other thing? Is there
no, one? And the other thing that we do that I never, if I had had it before, we would have never done this. You leave it in that plastic bag. It's in a box and then in a plastic bag. And you leave it in that plastic bag. And I know we've talked about this before, but if you have a fireplace or a little stove or your radiator, you put that on there or near it so it warms up and keep kind of moving it around. And it the heat will melt the butter in the bread.
Yeah, there's a lot of butter
in
the
bread. And that makes it so much better. When that shit's warm, it's off the hook.
It's really good. It's not it's for dunking, so good. Though. Like, you can't really dunk it in coffee. Nah. It just kind of disintegrates.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
And Gaji loves, like, Torone? What is
Gaji likes Torone, which is the nougat-y. It's like a meringue-y weird.
Yeah,
nougat-y
with almonds.
With almonds.
And what's the soft one?
There's just soft and hard Torone.
Oh, okay.
I don't really care for it. He also loves the Panforte from Siena. Panforte
that's
is
right.
Like another weird candied fruit and nut. Like disc almost.
Mm-hmm. You'll see a lot of that in artisanal ways, and that can be really good. But it seems like the general consensus is just get the good brand of panettone versus the artisanal panettone.
Yeah, everyone agrees that artisanal panettone will be like 25 or 30 euros, and a good one, commercial one, is 8. And you really can't tell the difference, to be honest. And the artisanal ones, you're always disappointed. I don't know.
There's something about where you're like, it's not quite the same this or consistency or this.
We don't eat it enough to – I don't True. Eat it enough or have it enough to really care either way. Our panettone count is one. We opened one, and I'm looking at one on the shelf right now.
However, I would like to put an offer out there. If there's any panettone artisanal purveyors out there listening to this podcast, send them our way. I'd love to try it out.
Oh, you're challenging anyone yep. who really makes panettone artisanally.
I'm offering a live review.
Man, we don't need that. We're fat enough.
Send it my way.
We have definitely started
the 61046 P.O. Bico.
We've definitely started the time of ingrassare to become
yes.
fatter.
The season of fatness. It's begun.
You know when
oh my God.
When Jason decides to make that chocolate cake sounds delicious, and I just decide to make a double layer chocolate cake with chocolate icing, that it's like, oh man, stop it.
French buttercream frosting.
Yeah, we got to throw that. We got to give that away. We've gone through half of it. And we have to stop.
Well, we could jump to this. You know what else you've been making, and I'm hooked.
Oh yeah,
is the focaccia. Like, we just did a simple search, so I wish there was some great story behind where
we got this.
But to be honest,
I just didn't have bread on one day, and I didn't want to go out the other day. And focaccia is a really easy one to make. It's a quick bread, and it uses olive oil, so you kind of have to eat it warm, or then warm it back up. Otherwise, the consistency isn't very good. But the recipe goes as follows: two small spoons of dried
leavening.
Dried leavening. So the powdery leavening. I doubled it. I did 24. I did 4 tablespoons or 4 teaspoons or 24 grams. Then it's 200 milliliters of warm water, 1 spoonful of sugar, or you can also use malt, or you can also – I used
honey,
and it worked out great. 300 grams of flour for flour for bread type 0 or bread flour. Hold on. My screen went out. A spoonful of salt, 2 tablespoons of extra virgin olive oil, and 70 milliliters for the pan. So I didn't really measure the 70 milliliters for the pan. You just kind of drizzle a good amount of olive oil on the bottom of the pan you're going to use to cook the bread in. And then a nice fat pinch of sea salt, fat sea salt for the top when you put it in. In a bowl, you're going to take your your water, your warm water, the little bit of sugar or malt or honey, and your lievito, your yeast. And you're going to dissolve it and make sure it's active. You then put in your flour, work it. I worked it like 8 minutes or so until it's nice and springy and it kind of does its thing. Then you add in your extra virgin olive oil once the flour and water kind of come together. Add in your olive oil and the salt. Work it 8 minutes or so until it's springy, and then you kind of push it into a sheet pan, whatever size you want. Obviously, the thinner the sheet, the cookie sheet with the sides, the thinner, the bigger it is, the thinner your pizza will be, or your
focaccia.
The focaccia will be. You can put anything you want into the dough. We did a cooking class last week with salsa verde, and I'm not going to use the salsa verde, so I just put the salsa verde, which is basically herbs, garlic, and olive oil into the dough, and it worked out perfect.
Oh my god, it worked out too good. I couldn't stop eating it. It was excellent. I would strongly suggest it. How much salsa verde did you put in there?
I just chewed two tablespoons because it called for 2 tablespoons of olive oil. So.
Oh my god, that was so good.
And I know I stumbled through that because I was reading the recipe in Italian and trying to translate it to you in English.
And then there's like a whole series of rising.
Yeah, you let it rise once, it'll shrink back a little bit. You push it down, you let it rise again, then you put your fingers, knuckles into the top, let it rise another 20 minutes, you know, just like regular bread, and then pop it into a hot oven.
We'll post it.
I have to do the conversion into, it's in metric, I have to do the conversion into standard, and then we'll post it up there. But if you're looking for something different for the holiday season.
Could you use, like you do in your pizza, could you use beer instead of the sugar or honey?
Absolutely. You can use beer, or instead of just sea salt on the top, you can put rosemary, you can put olives, you can put what I put, salsa verde, pesto. It doesn't matter.
It wasn't
you
too
want.
Thick. It wasn't. I didn't think it was greasy. Now out here, what we could do to step it up, and we talked about this because
we talked about this with Gaji. Is what they'll do is they'll cook it 3/4 of the way, and then they'll take lard and brush it onto the top of.
Say it
the
again.
Lard, fat, pork fat. And brush it onto the top of the pizza and then throw it back in. Well, I say pizza. I'm sorry. It's focaccia.
They call it pizza.
They call it pizza.
Anything
that's
here.
Bread that's flat is pizza. So so that's something different for the holidays that you can try and check out. And it's a quick bread. It doesn't take a whole lot of kneading. It doesn't take a whole lot of time. And
I mean, it's a great one. Do it at practice, you know, this weekend. And then for next, for Christmas, you're good to go. But it's a great one that you could cut up and make your own homemade focaccia.
Oh, homemade focaccia. Oh, homemade things. My favorite time of the year is coming around because there's two things that happen in the wintertime, two festivals in the winter that are awesome and very uniquely Italian. The first thing is the Living Nativity scene, which they just announced for Piobico.
December 28th.
Now, December 28th is a firm date, but in years past the date they always announce has not been firm. Because of weather or who knows, there's always a myriad of reasons why they change the date.
Yes.
The coolest thing is the baby that is born the closest to that date in Piobico, so the youngest child will become baby Jesus.
And it's great.
Which is kind of funny. So we don't know who baby Jesus will be yet.
Yep.
We were asked to – you want to tell your Living Nativity story?
We were asked to observe respectful silence when we were participating in it 1 year. We were a little
one
too –
one and only year.
The one and only year we were asked to participate. We were told by just somebody who was passing through that we were – the program says respectful silence. And because we were chatting it up. If you came
not
by
we,
our little
not
area.
We, not we.
It was like, hey, how's it going? Merry Christmas. How you doing? What's your cream?
Is that the royal we? Meaning like you were chatting it up?
I thought it was like a meet and greet.
Well, anyway, Ashley couldn't shut up when she was part of the Living Nativity scene. So we have not been asked to participate since. But that's okay. I enjoy going, to be honest. It was fun to be part of it, but it gets really cold and you have to stay still and you can't talk. Or you're not supposed to talk.
Yeah.
So. And we didn't get to be in a real – we were paper makers. There were other scenes where they were like eating sausages and hanging out and drinking wine.
Yeah.
But it was our – listen, we were rookies. It was our first year. Would not expect to get to be at the
– head
scene,
of the table.
Yeah, the scene where you're getting to eat sausages
and
drink
wine. No, that's like – sought after.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's for veterans. That's for veterans only. Yep. But
there's another one where there's like the bread maker and there's a fireplace going. That'd be a good one.
Yep, there's a fireplace going. But it was good. It was fun. And we'll be there this year. And Bafana as well, the 6th. So the
yes, La Bafana for Epiphany. And we again, we've talked about this stuff every year, but Orbana, our neighboring village, is the home of La Bafana. So there's always a myriad of different festivals and events going on for it. And make sure, check out, if you want to see a bit about it, check out our YouTube page and the Top of the Marque. And there's a 60-second clip or so of a Bafana thing, and then our little walk through the village and asking people about who the Bafana is and
all you need to know about Bafana.
Yeah,
it's the thing that the and we've I've I we keep saying this, but after you we talk we tell the same stories, but after walking through Urbana in when we were here visiting and seeing that festival on the 6th of January, and it was freezing outside and just tons of people. It was it was really, really cool.
What else is going on?
I wanted to talk about the New York Times article about Italy and the internet. Come on over here.
Okay.
So from time to time, there are articles in the national newspapers, whether it be the New York Times, the London Times, blah, 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 where they're like, oh, this is happening. It's like, yeah, no crap. And happening in Italy. And here's one of them.
Actually, this article was sent to us from Ben in Washington, in Eastern Washington. Ben.
Thank you, Ben. This is December 2nd in the New York Times. And it's, a village has all of what Italy wants, the internet. And here's some Italy fun fact that I didn't know. Roughly a third of Italians have never used the internet, giving the country one of the lowest rates of usage in Europe.
That's let that sink in. That's insane. What we're in 2014, almost 2015.
We're in 2015, baby. One in three Italians have never used the internet. And
like we know Gacci's like afraid of it. You know,
I don't think he's afraid of have use for it.
No, but he's afraid to do like transactions online. So, like he's afraid to actually utilize it in its full capacity.
Internet, as we have a high speed internet connection, only came to us last year through a satellite. It is super. You could have a car payment or have high speed internet in a rural location like us. Basically, is what it comes down to. Internet is not like businesses, big businesses, of course, but people like businesses don't have websites. If they do have a website, it's absolutely terrible. Trying to do online purchases was really difficult up until last year. Finally, they've started to come out with cards that are designed specifically for the internet, and they don't freak out because our bank would block our cards every, like we're talking about eBay purchases for $20 or Amazon or, you know, whatever, they'd block the card and freak it out, and it would freak out.
Only now is internet banking becoming available. It's kind of why.
So there's this New York Times article just talks about how this one town, north of Torino, wanted to get internet, just to become connected, and how they did that, and
I think it was like a university, part of a university program or something.
To make the access points and to simply because we don't have an infrastructure for it. We're kind of a mountainous country, and the curse and the blessing of Italy is tradition. We Italians don't really. Like, it's weird. We were talking about this the other day. It seems like fashion, we're right on the forefront of everything. You'll see weirdo fashion here way before you'll see it in anywhere else in the world. But things like technology especially, we're just light years behind. Mm-hmm. It's insane. And it's really crippling Italy.
Well, that's what this article was saying, too, that it's crippling the way business is done here. So businesses can't have normal, even they mentioned in this article, they can't have normal,
video conference. They're like, how can we be taken seriously internationally if we can't have a video conference? And it's true. You have to have high speed broadband internet to have a video conference,
which segueing into our online live cooking classes. That's why this is such a big deal for us to even be trying to do this because we're pretty lucky. We even have internet, you know,
Oh, yeah. Well, we're, yeah, we are very lucky.
I mean, it seems ridiculous that we make a big deal or that it's that the quality isn't as good as it could be. It's as best as we can hope for out here at this point. I mean, it's just indietro, a little bit in the past.
this article goes on now, but for now, the country lives with a yawning digital and cultural divide. Has left behind not only a large swath of Italians, but Italy itself from much of the rest of Europe and the United States. Italy has one of the lowest rates of broadband connection per household in Europe, half as many as, say, neighboring Switzerland, because that's really interesting. There's another country that's a very mountainous region, and they Switzerland's small, and they seem to have much easier time with broadband connection. I mean, they also do world banking, so I don't know. It's just it's one of those things that we just have accepted because of where we live. It's you can't have your cake and eat it too. So if this is what this is something that's going to freak you out, we've just come to expect that the technology is not there. I can't go and find businesses, local businesses, like I'd want to with the internet, like you probably do.
Oh yeah, like you can't just search mechanics in the area or simple things like that because most aren't going to have a website. I mean, if they're listed in the yellow pages, then that kind of thing, then de facto it'll be online. But most businesses, most searches, that is still not quite how it's done.
No. Especially out here. We can't speak for Rome or something like that, but out here, websites for businesses are non-existent.
No, and they really don't trust even like TripAdvisor or these things either. It's really funny.
No. Okay, just different. But I thought that we'll put the link up to this article, and it's true. Italy is way behind in the digital, and it's costing. They were talking about how it's costing Italy GDP.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's ridiculously expensive. Most Italians would. There's no way they would pay what we pay per month for high speed internet.
No.
Out here. No way. They just wouldn't have it. And it's because there's not enough people who demand it. So it's just like that's what it costs. It's insane. We have to have it. Our whole lives are on the internet. Whether you're listening to us over the internet, our 90% of our bookings for the Agriturismo come over the internet. Ashley puts her videos out over the internet. So whatever it costs, we have to have it.
And speaking of the internet,
oh, what a segue!
Our next live from Italy online cooking classes is this Sunday, the 28th. We had one last week, the 21st, and that was excellent. We did, well, I guess it doesn't matter what we did. Let's go about what's next. We're doing butternut squash soup and tiramisu.
Oh, if you do not like tiramisu, literally to pick me up because you have had it and you don't care for it, try this way that we're going to do it. It's the real way to make tiramisu with eggs, sugar, mascarpone cheese. And I know we had a big debate about mascarpone cheese last time. And give this one a try. And also a staple of autumn, winter, butternut squash soup. Super duper easy, really smooth and light and delicious.
It's gorgeous. These are two great things that you could add to your Christmas menu. And that's why we thought we would do it as kind of a Christmas prep. So a soup could feed just a beautiful table for two or a whole army. And same with tiramisu. It can be scaled up very easily.
That will be this Sunday, the what? You know the day.
21st.
Oh, my God. It's the 21st. Is this
Sunday is the 21st. And it will be live on YouTube. And you can either just go to youtube.com / the Tavola Marque / live. And you'll find it. Or you can shoot me an email, info@latavolamarque.com, to make sure you're on our roster for getting all the details for the cooking classes. If you want to cook along, it's good to be on the list because you get ahead of time the prep list, the ingredients, all the links for the recipes and all of that. Otherwise, just click it when it's live and watch for fun and go back and cook along to it later if you want. It's going to be at noon on
You can't give out. There's like six different times.
All right. It's all at one time. But
it's all at one moment in time. You got to check out.
Depends on where you live.
Where you live. And we'll just, it's 9 p.m. Italy time. So if you're 6 hours behind Italy, on like for the East Coast of the States, do the math.
do the math. Let's see. What else is going on? We went to Cortona the other day.
Oh, yeah. So we announced a couple of weeks ago that we're moving. Well, this is going to be our last year doing the Agriturismo. And we pretty much know what we're going to be doing next. But, you know, you always keep your eye out for other things going on.
And I'm a total believer of, like, in the universe that way, too. When you put it out there, you kind of have to put it out there to see what comes back, too. So once we made that announcement, it was both liberating, exciting, and made you want to throw up because you're like, oh my God, we really are doing this. We're switching things up. But we met a guy at the restaurant in Apecchio who wanted to show us some of his properties, and he'd heard of us and was like, oh my gosh. Then this other family from Cortona, have been wanting to meet us for like a year.
Yeah, friends with Gaji. We've met them a few times. They're from Cortona, which is in Tuscany, over the hill. And they have all these properties, and they wanted us to come and look at some of my guests to see if we wanted to run them. Blah. We weren't really interested in running properties in Tuscany, but we've never been to Cortona. And I think it's just prejudice because of...
Okay, go ahead. Skip the best part of the story of why we even went to begin with.
Yeah, well, we kept on telling the doctor for a year, listen, we're not interested in moving to Tuscany. We're not interested in moving to Tuscany. And he said, finally, listen, ragazzi.
Guys.
They own this restaurant that's really famous. We're going to go to lunch there after. Let's just go so we can go try this restaurant. He wants lunch.
He was like, you guys, it's a free lunch. Let's just go.
It's free lunch.
Yeah, you have to look at the house, but it's a free lunch. And it was like, all right, fine, Godster. We'll go for a GD free lunch.
I think I've been...
Which cracks me up.
It does crack me up. And it was good lunch.
Yeah,
it was
a two-hour drive for the free lunch.
For the free lunch, 2 hours each way.
Yeah.
I think we've been prejudiced towards Cortona because it's such quintessential for Americans with the Francis Myers and Under the Tuscan Sun and blah, blah, blah.
That's the... For people who don't know, Cortona is the famed city from... It's an Etruscan city. It was a Roman city. All of this. But what it is best known for is the home now. And the location from Under the Tuscan Sun. So it's weirdly like how Assisi... Catholics go on a pilgrimage to visit Assisi. Kind of.
It's almost like Americans have to go to Cortona.
Yeah, have this pilgrimage to Cortona to see like where this famed American moved. And I agree. I guess we were prejudiced against it. We
never been.
We flew over it in a hot air balloon ride on our honeymoon, but we never went. And people would ask us and be like, I don't know. I've never been there. And
it's an hour. Well, it depends who drives.
Well, and I want to say one thing too. I think part of why we say that with attitude or prejudice, or we joke about that, is because what we're leaving out is that many people have asked if we moved here because of that book. So that's why we have that reaction. Oh, did you guys read Under the Tuscan Sun?
We kind of feel like we live in Marque, and Marque is like the bastard stepchild to Toscana.
The redheaded stepchild.
It's the redheaded stepchild to Toscana. So I'm a homer.
Sorry, gingers.
I'm a homer. I'm Marque all the way, baby.
Exactly. So sorry. I had to preface all of that with
So that. Driving to Cortona, absolutely gorgeous. It's a town built up on a hill.
We'll explain the drive. So we go from our house, which is up in the Apennines, in the foothills of the Apennines. We go up and over the Apennines, down into the valley of Umbria, and then we come into Tuscany. And those very quintessential rolling hills.
Hills with the
cypress trees.
It is absolutely gorgeous. You can tell that there is much more investment in the valley below. You can just tell that... Like, when you drive around here, you see all these little farmhouses, and they're in ruins. And even the houses that people do live in are just a little bit dirtier and have a little bit more shit outside.
Yeah.
Whereas around there, the houses that would be ruins here are immaculately put back together. The stone is gleaming. There's places that real Italians live that would have, like, you know, around here, there's, like, farm equipment and just crap outside. There isn't. It just looked like
it's
a more...
Restored and refined.
Restored, refined. All the roads were perfect. The roads out here are kind of crappy. absolutely beautifully gorgeous, but you could see right away, it's like, oh, there's more money out here than mm-hmm. we have where we live.
And driving into Cortona with this family who the mom, that's where she grew up. It was interesting because she'd say, okay, now here we are getting, as we're coming down into the valley here, this is where all the Strani area, all the strangers have bought the property.
All the foreigners.
And that's why, I mean, it's good and bad. That's why it's all restored, because it's all this foreign money that came in. So, kind of that double-edged sword, but she would say, as you know, this area is really filled with just the foreigners, and at the grocery stores you'll find peanut butter and
just a bunch of stuff for the foreigners, because exactly. It's all Brits and Americans who live there. Mm-hmm. So just kind of interesting walking through the city center of Cortona. Lots
beautiful.
Of beautiful, lots of really high, like nice shops.
Cashmere.
Yeah. Ashley found a cashmere sweater shop.
Oh my God.
I had to pull her out.
It was for Jason and I awesome because we live in Italy. We live in a tiny farm village. So like to go to this town that had all these gorgeous little artisanal shops and paper, gorgeous paper and stamps and stuff. We were like, oh, look at that. Let's go shopping. Let's walk around. And maybe it was that. Maybe it was the American in us. But they know how to make it. And it was all set up for the holidays. So all the Christmas lights and Christmas, bancas, the like
yeah.
stalls.
And again, Tuscany just knows how to cater yes. to a foreign tourist. As soon as you walk in, there are three or four shops with all the shit that is takeaway for... You know,
the dried pasta.
Dried pasta in the correct size packaging for the plane. Or if it's olive oil, it's in a bunch of little small things so you can bring it on. There's maps and in like four or five different languages. There's
and just the wooden signs. It's all very quintessentially
they do,
idyllic.
They do it. They totally bring what people are expecting.
Yeah, that feeling you get.
Yeah.
And they did it right. But at the same time, like when I was talking to the shopkeeper who had the cashmere store, you know, she was saying that if it wasn't for the strangers, the foreigners, that, you know, she wouldn't be able to sell the cashmere to the locals at the price and all of that too. So it's good, but that it's pushed a lot of locals out of being able to have
oh
shops
my
and
goodness,
things.
Of course. Yeah. You just even walking around, we heard a lot of English being spoken.
Oh, yeah. That was I just didn't like that. I mean, I love that where we live, we are the foreigners. Like, I don't want to hear English. That's why we moved to Italy, you know?
Yeah, that's it wasn't – I would love to go back for – like
exactly.
Go back for a day, but it's not where I would want to live because I want to be the foreigner. I don't want to be – I want to be the only, you know, foreigner around a bunch of Italians, not one of mm-hmm. a whole community of foreigners.
Well, let's talk about the house, the property.
Oh, my God. It was incredible.
So we drive up and then we go to the country house first, which is just kind of below the city and just directly below the city. And shockingly, the town, the città, with a lot of trees, though. Like, it had a nice little closed-in feel when you were down there.
Mm-hmm.
This is the true sense of a villa. This is a huge property with like five different house structures on
there was,
it.
Yeah, the main structure with the giant windows spaced.
Oh,
it was three or four
God.
Levels. It was just a rectangle, three or four levels.
This and is like the noble estate.
Yeah, you can tell how – we only went into the first floor of that structure. And it was gorgeous. But you could tell how far the windows were spaced apart, that the ceilings in every floor were super tall. Then we checked out what they called the Agriturismo, which was a couple hundred meters off, away from the main house. And it was gorgeous. And it had the area there that they processed the wine with the, how do you call those peaked ceilings? What do you call those? You know what I'm talking, with that one in there.
Oh yeah. Sorry. I didn't know you were going to talk about that right away. Like domed.
They're domed, but they have all the little – they're made out of stone, and they're the dome ceilings. And,
like, not arched. I have to think about it. Sorry. We'll keep going.
It was just incredible, and they did a really good job of restoring these places. These places were restored immaculately.
Yeah. They did the cool thing where you have, like, the glass in the floor, so you can look down and see the underworkings for the mill that was for the olives and – it was pretty freaking cool. However, classically also redone where they kept gorgeous things like a sink in the corner of a bedroom, an old stone sink, and this big, neat old fireplace that had a stool that was built into the inside of the fireplace and a little window nook. Like, how insane to have a fireplace so big you can not only sit there, but there's a window in it. I mean, in the bedroom. This was so, so cool. However, the layout was slightly bizarre. It wasn't right for us. It's not where we want
to. No, it's got the weirdo Italian, you know, it's the weirdo layout from, you know, 400 years ago. Not really what we're looking for. But if you get a chance to go with someone who's looking at properties and you get to go inside of them.
It's so much fun.
It's so much fun.
We saw the Forno. Like, we knew right away. Like, you just get a feeling, whether it's for your own home or for a business, you just get that gut feeling, yes or no, immediately. And it's pretty profound for Jason and I. If we see something we like, you know it right away. And this we just knew wasn't for us. It was too close to the city. It didn't have the country feel and the kind of remoteness that we enjoy. But we thought, well, maybe something inside will change our mind. And we were getting the tour, and it's cool. And it's always so interesting and so cool to see how respectful they were, different people are to restoring a property and what they kind of keep important for them. And what they find of value, because like Jason was talking about the cantina area with like these domed ceilings, they weren't even going to show us. They had to go get another key. And then we were like, well, if they're not saying it's a big deal, then it's no big deal. But they went to go get the key. All right, we'll look. Holy shit. They should have started the tour with that. It would have had a whole different setting or feeling in our head walking around, because that was that space where you get the tingles going. Oh, what you could do in here.
It just, the ceilings were really high, and it just had this damp, wet feeling, and it was really cool. The giant, giant barrels that were like 10,000 liter barrels that held all the wine.
How about the grain mill part that, or whatever, that we had never, I'd never,
never seen anything like that. I mean, just to have dinner in this room, or just to have an aperitivo, or just kind of hang out, just how somehow use the room.
Yes. You should have had these doors open and like, that is the part that is so cool. It's just, oh, I don't know. It gave you chills.
So again, their perspective of what is cool and interesting is totally different from ours, because they were more the Roman mill stuff is absolutely gorgeous, and the fact that they restored all the bedrooms the way they did is
it's beautiful.
But how do they not find that to be the cantina with these giant barrels and this where they store the grain and this the history?
There was even huge windows in there. That's what I thought was so interesting too. The house from the out and that part of the property from the outside did not nearly represent the age of what was inside those walls, because from the outside it looked like just a newly restored part, and it was like, all right.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. It really was a surprise right there. And weirdly enough, too, now living in the country, I kind of get off on checking out, like, the different barns and stuff, like the different places where you could use his workspace and stuff. It was like, oh man, look where you could put a tractor in there. They also, the other property structure that they had, the people who care for the land, that where they kept those tractors was incredible also. I thought those would be like lunchrooms with huge windows.
Oh, I'm sure they were something.
Oh my God. Or like,
there's just so many buildings. They were just saying there's just so many buildings on this. These people have, this has been in their family for hundreds of years. They didn't acquire all this stuff yesterday. So now that it's just too much to keep up for them.
Well, they have regular jobs.
Yeah, they have real jobs. They don't, it's not like they just chill and take care of these houses. It's not like they're
And lawyers and
Downton Abbey. Veterinaries. I take care of this house.
No, they have other regular lives. Yeah. So the maintaining of this property isn't just a hobby. It's a lot of work.
So
they were looking for someone else to do it.
So, but I'm sure they'll find someone. That place sells itself.
God, then we went up to the Palazzo part in the city. That was just incredible too.
But Cortona's great. It's worth a stop and a lunch. I don't know if you really need days to walk around it. But
would agree.
But definitely, you can spend a morning
a drive through.
Yeah, a morning and have some lunch. It's really, really beautiful. And that whole area, you could keep from Montepulciano to Umbertide. I used to always call this, okay, look it up if you're interested in looking up. It looks like it's called Umbertide, this town in Umbria, but it's not.
And that's because it's Umbria, so you think Umber.
Umbertide. And I was told, no, it's Umbertide.
Because there's the accent.
There's the accent, but no one puts the accent on any of the signs because You're just supposed to know that there's an accent there.
You're right. That's why we didn't see it, because you're just looking at the road sign.
There's no accent on it, so I say it wrong. And now if you put the accent, you know to stress the no one cares. Okay, here we go.
Well, we'll keep you guys posted on the property search, though. It's fun checking out these places.
Oh, yeah. So today, what's going on today? Today, we're going to jump in the car here, and we are going to go to the Costa Fano. I need to get some all-weather tires for the car for the winter, because we need to get some new ones.
We live in an area that you have to have the winter tires.
Winter tires and chains in your car is mandatory, so it is a great excuse to go get some fish for lunch.
Exactly. I was going to say, tires, schmires. It's all about the fish, baby.
Where do you want... Now, there's a few places. We go to Fano usually because we know Fano the best. And there's three different categories of fish lunch you can go for. You can go for the ultra cheap cafeteria slide your tray fisherman's cooperative.
Did we talk about that?
Yeah, we've done this.
No. I think so. And how we just went there recently.
We did go there. Maybe
I think we did that on a podcast. Okay.
Or you can go to the next level up, which is, you know, 15 euro, 18 euro. And then that's like the family trattoria style. Or you can go high end. We're talking 25 euro. Woo!
Baller
style. And go to like sit down tablecloths.
And I know we've talked about it before too, but it's hysterical because we'll like suggest places for people to go in Fano. And two of the names of places are the cheesiest chain restaurant style names. One is Yankee and the other is Chili's.
Chili's.
But... It just is. It's
they are not. I promise they are not chains. So, well, I know these are tough decisions. You're sitting there in traffic right now, being like, "Nice assholes." That's your whole day today. Whether to decide to go to the nice restaurant or just the family style one.
I think I want to go to the nice restaurant, but order something simple.
Whatever.
What do you want?
I would like grilled fish.
Okay.
Grilled fish.
We had fish in Cortona, too, and that threw Gaji a huge loop. He did not like the idea of being so far inland and having seafood because he lives on the coast. He didn't trust it. He didn't like it.
He didn't like it. Well, you eat carne when you come to inland. He didn't like it. Everyone else ate fish because the cook was from Napoli, so she did a lot of Napolitano things, which is great. We were talking about that as well at the table. Why can't there be a... For instance, when you live around here, there are restaurants who most of the restaurants just serve the dishes of the area, which is great. Awesome. However, if you live here, you don't want to eat tagliatelle with ragu when you go out to a restaurant, except here they do, which is absolutely insane. Okay?
Why? That's what you eat every night at home.
So why can you not have a restaurant in Urbino, for example, that serves dishes from Napoli or dishes from
Calabria
or dishes from Torino or name a different place? Why can we not have that? And everyone does like there was no good answer for that.
No, there really wasn't. It was kind of like,
well, that's not what you want.
And we were like, yeah, we're all at this restaurant right now having dishes from a Napolitano and enjoying it.
Yeah, and they're like, well, you can, in big cities, you can get Chinese food. And we're like, no, that's not what we're talking about. I just want the sauce and the pasta that's typical in Napoli, a Napolitano restaurant in Urbino. How about it? Let's do it. I don't know anything about Napolitano.
This is too far-fetched, too wild of an idea. I guess one more
Pump the brakes. Oh, my God. All right.
Anything else we need to get down there? I want to go to the big store and just check out the Panettone and go grocery shopping.
All right. We can get some different things. I also want to get – we need to get pure alcohol because it's almost time to start making limoncello. It'll be – before you know it, it'll be lemon and orange time. So we can do stuff like that. All right. Very good. You want to bring us home? I think that are we going to do the song of the week?
Yeah. God bring rest you, merry gentlemen. We were going to do an Italian song, but as we were researching, because we couldn't think of a really Italian Christmas song, that's because they listen to like American and U.S. English-speaking Christmas music for the most part. So we figured, well, if we didn't find an Italian one we liked, we'll just pick one of our favorites. And this one is it's a classic in our household, so we hope you enjoy. You can find us on letavolamarche.com, letavolamarche.blogspot.com, livefromitalyonline.tumblr.com for all of the information for the live cooking classes. You can shoot me an email at info@letavolamarche.com to get on our mailing list. And you can find me at Instagram at Ashley Bartner, AshleyBartner. And I think that's it. Have a happy, happy holidays. And hopefully we'll do another podcast before Christmas. Buon Natale. Ciao.
God rest ye merry gentlemen. Let nothing you dismay. Remember Christ our Savior was born upon this day to save us all from Satan's power when we were gone astray. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy, comfort and joy. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy. From God our Heavenly Father this blessed angel came, and unto certain shepherds brought tidings of the same, how that in Bethlehem was born the Son of God by name. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy, comfort and joy. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy. Oh, star of wonder, star. Gentlemen.